Now on to the letters to the evening news. Just four this week. First of all, Willem Buttinger of Norwich disputes a claim made in earlier letter to the paper that private provision to the NHS should not happen. He writes, Peter Kemp's letter of July the 18th laments the increasing role of private providers in the NHS, arguing that it results in poorer quality care and higher costs. However, his position appears more ideologically driven than based on evidence. Surely the priorities for any healthcare system should be first that it remains free at the point of delivery, and second, it's delivered in a most efficient and effective way possible. Take general practice, for instance. GPs have long operated as private contractors within the NHS framework. Is there compelling evidence that nationalising this service would improve care or reduce costs? The same question applies to dentistry, optometry, and various specialist services that already operate outside direct NHS provision. My wife's recent cataract surgery, carried out at a non-NHS clinic but fully NHS-funded, was excellent in every respect. I find it hard to believe that an NHS-run facility could have provided a better outcome. Rather than dismissing private involvement out of hand, we should focus on outcomes, efficiency and accessibility. Ideology should not cloud good healthcare provision.
Trevor Lewis of Trowes wonders why water companies are not consulted enough on major building projects. Your report, EDP, the 21st of July, in connection with a planning application at Sedgeford, notes that water companies are not statutory planning consultees and are unable to prevent a development permission to be granted, even if it would overload the local sewage works. This came on the same day as the publication of Sir John Cunliffe's independent Water Commission report into the water industry. Addressing this issue, Recommendation 72 says, the role of water companies in the planning process in England should be strengthened to ensure they have sufficient sight and influence over upcoming developments. The right to connect should be reviewed. That would be a step in the right direction. However, the lack of a specific recommendation on the right to connect is disappointing. Developers will be fighting tooth and nail to retain it.
On a similar public interest theme, Alan Hare of Swaffham suggests solar panels should be placed on roofs rather than on farmland. It has been reported in the EDP of the 14th of July that 17,000 acres of Norfolk farmland has been earmarked for solar panels. Surely we're misguided if we lose such an acreage of productive farmland to these panels. Those 17,000 acres would otherwise be used to grow a wide variety of crops. With such a mosaic of crops, it's complicated to work out the economics involved. So for the sake of simplicity, I'll base them on the humble spud, perhaps the most basic of our food crops. Taking the average yield of potatoes as around 18 tonnes per acre, our 17,000 acres would produce 306,000 tonnes of potatoes per year. Since we already import around 50% of our food requirements, this 306,000 tonnes would now have to be imported annually rather than being homegrown. Now, think about the volume of emissions that would result from transporting this 306,000 tonnes of potatoes across Europe every year. At an imported price of £350 per tonne, our 306,000 tonnes would be valued at just shy of £110 million annually, thus adding a sizeable chunk to our balance of payments deficit, and it wouldn't do anything to our food biosecurity either. Having based my calculations on potatoes, I do understand they're rotational crops, but as I said earlier, that brings us back to the mosaic of crops that results in long and complicated mathematics. I'm in favour of using solar panels in our quest for net zero, but surely we should be positioning them on houses, factories, warehouses, car parks, etc., before we destroy vast areas of our valuable farmland.
Finally, Paul Milner of Sheringham says there are more than enough eateries in Sheringham. Sheringham Town Council has realised it's too easy to turn a vibrant small town into a downmarket dump. By recently refusing permission for another pizza joint and opposing another fish and chip shop, it's encouraging to see that they realise having 41 eateries in the town with plenty more in the immediate vicinity means enough is enough. I witnessed the result of too many wrong decisions when I visited my hometown of Maidstone after a lapse of 50 years. My once pleasant country town is now a mess of Turkish barbers, tatty nail bars, run-down shops, pubs into gloomy nightclubs and empty banks now drab cafes. After a very depressing morning, I couldn't wait to leave. One bad decision easily leads to another, then another, and before you know it,